Have you ever wondered why zebras have those strange stripes? Or how they live and love? And how do zebras defend themselves against enemies? I am the Safari Guide. My name is Frank, and today I'm going to talk about an animal that everyone knows, or at least thinks they know. And the zebra is perfectly adapted to life in the African savannas. The most striking thing about the zebra, of course, is its black and white stripes. First of all, no zebra has the same stripe pattern as another. Not even the left and right sides of a single animal are identical. The pattern works like a fingerprint. Mother and foal imprint on each other by scent, by voice, and especially by the stripe pattern. In a larger group, this allows each mare to recognize her own foal, even when dozens of young animals are running around together. So let's get to the important question. Are zebras actually white with black stripes, or the other way around, black with white stripes? Biology tells us that under the fur, the skin is dark, and then there are areas with black hairs, which are heavily pigmented, and other areas where there is little or no color at all. These areas then appear white. So you could say that a zebra is actually a black animal and nature simply forgot to add color in certain places. But I find a much more exciting question to be, why do they have these stripes at all? There isn't a single definitive answer, but there are several very intriguing theories. And maybe there's a bit of truth to all of them. One old theory is that the stripes serve as camouflage. In the savanna, it's hot and dusty, and when the animals move, the contrast of black and white blur together. To a predator, this then looks like a shimmering curtain of stripes, not like individual animals that can be hunted. When a lion attacks, it usually focuses on a single animal, a young, old, or injured zebra. However, if the herd stays close together, it becomes more difficult for a predator to hunt a single animal. For the lion, that's really tough. It's like a disco with strobe lights. Movement everywhere, contrasts everywhere. It becomes almost impossible to focus on a single zebra. A second theory is, the stripes serve for thermoregulation. Black stripes absorb more heat than white stripes. This microcontrast could create small air currents on the surface of the body. This basically works like a kind of air conditioning. This hasn't been definitively proven, but it shows that the zebra pattern is much more than just a pretty outfit. The most credible current theory deals with insects. Tsetse flies, they like to suck the blood of mammals. I can confirm that. It's terribly unpleasant. On my last trip to Africa, I also got a few bites from these insects. By the way, tsetse flies also transmit serious diseases. In humans, it's sleeping sickness. In animals, it's a disease called nagana. And in experiments, it was found that tsetse flies are more likely to land on solid-colored, dark surfaces than on striped ones. The zebra's striped pattern reflects light in such a way that it confuses the fly's compound eye. As a result, flies land much less frequently on zebras than on solid-colored animals and humans. So the stripes help reduce the number of bites and therefore also the number of diseases. Yes, evolution really came up with something clever for the zebra, and this insight has even found practical applications. Many Japanese farmers, this is no joke, many Japanese farmers now paint white stripes on their valuable Wagyu cattle. There is a scientific study on this. The result? 50% fewer insect bites. Animal blankets with zebra patterns have also been proven to work. In summary, you can say these stripes are not a fashion gimmick, but a true all-rounder. They camouflage, cool, and protect against insects. And that's exactly why you can see on a zebra just how ingenious evolution's designs can be. Zebras are absolute herd animals. The typical social structure among zebras is the harem. A harem consists of an adult stallion, usually 4 to 5 mares, and their foals. The stallion is the one who keeps the group together. While grazing, he usually stays on the edge or at the very back. That way, he always has an eye on potential dangers. If a lion or a hyena approaches, he positions himself protectively between the herd and the threat. Among the mares, there is a clear hierarchy. This is related to age. The oldest mare, often the stallion's first companion, has a lot of influence over when and where the harem moves. She knows the best waterholes, the safest sleeping spots, and the paths the herd has used for years. That's why she usually leads the group. Young stallions stay in their birth family for a few years until they reach sexual maturity. Then the dominant stallion more or less politely shows them the door, in other words, chases them away. These teenagers form bachelor groups. There they train, fight, play, tussle, the whole package. And they keep doing this until one of them is eventually strong enough to win his own harem. Most of the time, it goes like this. A young stallion stays near an existing herd, waits for the right moment, and then tries to lure away a mare or even take over the entire harem. And let me tell you, it can get really brutal. There's a lot of biting and kicking involved. I've often seen a zebra with a short, stubby tail or scars on its neck and flanks. You might think that was caused by a predator, but in most cases, those are marks from fights among themselves. How do zebras feed? Zebras are what are called non-selective grazers. What does that mean? They eat a lot, but they're not particularly picky. They prefer short, fresh grass, but they'll also eat medium-length blades, dead grass, and even quite tough grasses. Because they consume so much roughage, zebras need to drink every day. In many areas, you rarely find them more than 10 kilometers from a permanent water source. They're cautious when drinking. Often, one animal stands guard with its head raised while the others lower their heads to the water and drink. Something else you often see, zebras like to set out together with other animals. Most of all, they prefer to be with the striped noose. That's perfect teamwork. The zebras first eat the coarse, tough layers, essentially clearing the way for the gnus, who prefer the short, fine grasses underneath. Zebras are not ruminants. They are so-called hindgut fermenters. They have a voluminous cecum and a large colon. There, bacteria live that break down the tough plant fibers. This fermentation process runs super fast, but it's not particularly efficient. And as a result, zebras have to eat enormous amounts. And what comes out? A lot of gas. This gas really bloats their bellies. That's why zebras almost always look round and well-fed, even when they're actually sick or weakened. Anyone on safari who tries to judge a zebra's fitness by its belly is mistaken. I look at the mane. If it's standing firm and upright, the animal is healthy. If it droops limply to the side, the body has already started to break down the fat reserves under the mane. That's a sign of a health problem. And then there's the very real effect of this gassy digestion. When zebras get startled and take off at a gallop, they let out a lot of flatulence. And anyone who has ever driven right behind a herd in an open vehicle knows why there's always something to laugh about. But let's move away from digestion and look at what else zebras do with their bodies. Maybe you've seen the following before. A zebra suddenly drops to the ground. It rolls around thoroughly in the dust, stretching all four legs up in the air, and then stands up again completely covered in dust. Not only does this look funny, but there's also a really good reason for it. These dust baths are basically the savannah's version of a wellness treatment and serve three purposes at once. First, the whole thing is a great defense against annoying parasites. Ticks, mites, or lice really don't like this fine dust at all. Secondly, the dust acts as a kind of protective layer on the skin. You could say it's the zebra's natural sunscreen against the blazing African sun. And thirdly, well, apparently the animals just have a lot of fun doing it too. Many zebras look really relaxed after such a dust bath, content with themselves and the world. An important form of coat care is what's called allogrooming, mutual grooming. It works like this. Two zebras stand close together in opposite directions, but slightly offset, so that each snout is roughly at the height of the other's neck. And then they begin to gently nibble and pluck at their partner's mane and shoulder area with their teeth. This reduces itching, removes loose hair, and strengthens the social bond between the animals. You rarely see zebras lying on the ground or sleeping. Like horses, zebras have a special locking mechanism in their legs, the so-called stay apparatus. Simply put, they can lock the tendons and ligaments in their knees and ankle joints in such a way that the weight is supported by the skeleton and tendons, not by the muscles. And so, zebras can doze while standing and relax their muscles without falling over. For rapid eye movement sleep, which we humans also call dream sleep, zebras also have to lie down. And this sleep phase is very short, maybe a total of 20 to 60 minutes a day. During this time, zebras are allowed to dream too. What they dream about, we don't know. Perhaps about endless grasslands without lions and without tsetse flies. When a zebra is in dream sleep, others from the herd stand guard. A typical position here is head to tail. Two zebras stand next to each other, but facing in opposite directions. This way they can keep watch both forward and backward at the same time, and their tails help swat flies from each other's faces. Brilliant, isn't it? By the way, you can find photos of zebras and a zebra quiz on my website, safariguide.online. Zebras are surprisingly loud animals. The typical zebra sound to many sounds like a mix between neighing and hysterical laughter. Please listen closely. These sounds mainly serve two purposes. On the one hand, they are contact calls. If an animal loses contact, it calls out and the family responds. The group comes back together, and on the other hand, they are alarm calls. As soon as danger threatens, the call becomes higher, faster, and much more urgent. In this way, an entire herd can be warned within seconds. Body language also plays a major role. When a zebra is threatening, it lays its ears flat, raises its head, bares its teeth, swings its neck, and turns sideways. A clear message. A kick is coming any moment now. Submissiveness, on the other hand, is shown by a lowered head and ears slightly laid back. Zebras have many enemies: lions, hyenas, wild dogs, and crocodiles. These animals are at the very top of the list. Basically, there are three strategies animals use to get out of danger. This applies to all animal species. Freeze, flee, or fight. Zebras usually choose to flee. An adult zebra can run up to 60 kilometers per hour. Short sprints, sudden changes of direction, and the chaos of an entire herd make it difficult for predators to keep up. And when escape is no longer possible, things get serious. Then the stallion positions himself protectively between the attacker and his family. Zebras can deliver powerful kicks with their hind legs. A single kick can even seriously injure a lion. At the same time, they use their teeth and bite into the neck and shoulders of their opponent. There is even a documented case. Lionesses had caught a zebra foal, and the zebras kept kicking and biting until the lionesses fled. Against crocodiles at waterholes, however, zebras have little chance. When an animal is drinking at the shore and its neck is stretched far forward, that's the perfect moment for an attack from the water. I've already talked about crocodiles in my first podcast episode. Now let's move on to the love life of zebras. When a mare is ready to mate, her scent changes, and the stallion tests this with a special behavior called flamen. And it looks like this. He curls his upper lip upward, bares his teeth, and holds his snout slightly raised in the air as if he had just bitten into a sour lemon. In reality, he is directing scent molecules to his Jacobson's organ. This sensory organ is located in the palate. It contains special sensory cells that react to certain chemical substances. It tells the stallion whether the mare is currently fertile. If that's the case, he defends her vigorously against rivals. And mating doesn't just happen once, but repeatedly over several days. And this increases the chances that the mare will actually become pregnant in the end. After about 12 months, usually only a single foal is born. Often, the birth coincides with the rainy season, when the grass is especially rich in nutrients. Twins are extremely rare in zebras. What's remarkable is how quickly they develop after birth. Just 10 to 15 minutes after birth, the foal tries to stand up. After 20 to 30 minutes, it is already standing fairly steadily on its legs. About an hour after birth, just imagine that, an hour after being born, a young zebra can follow its mother. This speed is vital for survival. In the savannah, a helpless young animal is easy prey. During the first few days, the mare stays a bit apart from the herd with her foal. This way, the young animal can calmly imprint on the mother's scent, voice, and stripe pattern, and vice versa. Zebra milk is nutritious but relatively low in fat. The foals start nibbling on grass after just a few weeks. Nevertheless, they are nursed for up to 18 months. During this time, they maintain a close bond with their mother and thus naturally remain part of the harem. But not everything is harmonious. When a new stallion takes over a harem, it can happen that he kills foals that are not his own. It's similar to what happens with lions. This way, the mares become ready to mate again more quickly and he can pass on his own genes. From a human perspective, it's brutal, but biologically, it is a common strategy in the animal kingdom. Perhaps you are listening to this podcast right now in your car, on the train, while jogging, or on the sofa far away from Africa. But maybe now you can get a sense of what it's like when, on safari, a group of zebras suddenly appears. The animals' bellies look round, not because they are all so well fed, but because their digestion constantly makes them bloated. One animal has a mane that has fallen slightly to the side. A small sign that something isn't right. And two others stand offset next to each other, heads facing the partner's back and their tails swatting at the flies. And suddenly you realize, behind each of these stripes, there's a story. The story of a stallion who fought for his family. The story of a mare who, in the first hours, resolutely shields her foal from all the curious onlookers. The story of a young animal that, for the first time, finds the courage to move a few meters away from its mother and then gallops back. Zebras are very commonly seen on safari. They shape the landscape of the savannah. And that's exactly why it's worth taking the time for them, not just quickly snapping a photo and moving on, but listening to how they graze, how their hooves loosen the ground, or how they call out to each other. Thank you for joining me on Safari today. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the Safari Guide, please check out my Patreon page. With your financial support, you help me continue this podcast independently and ad-free. And in doing so, you make it possible for new episodes to feature deeper research and even more stories from the world of safaris. Because that's what this is all about, not just seeing animals, but understanding them. You can find the link in the show notes. Thank you very much. Until the next episode, Frank, your safari guide.